Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm all right tonight, David. How about yourself?
Well, I'm a little down in the dumps, Bruce. I made the mistake of listening to the Flannery O'Connor audiobook.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you know that writer, but man, it was one depressing audiobook. She's kind of like the Herbert Selby Jr. of the South, I think, in terms of writing about depressing stories. So if you ever get a chance to read or listen to a book by Flannery O'Connor, Bruce, I'd just give it a pass. That's my advice to you.
Okay. Enough depressing stuff out there in the world without going out of my way.
Isn't that the truth? Okay. Back on track with tonight's game, 4-2 Oilers victory over the Flames of Calgary. Bruce, it was a weird game. The Oilers got up by two and kind of coughed up the lead. It seemed to me like the Oilers were a little cavalier, like they felt when they needed to win the game, they could win the game against this team, and they were right. Proving again, this is a team that can turn it off and on. And they did so tonight, I think. What was your take on it?
Yeah, it wasn't a very focused effort, I didn't think. There was lots of sloppy hockey, some poor decision-making, which we'll get into in a bit. There was lots of D-zone turnovers or failures to clear the puck or make clean plays with the puck in the defensive zone. I thought that actually got a little better late in the game when they finally tried to nurse home the 3-2 lead. They started making some plays in the defensive end, but it was not a real clean win. They got fairly heavily outshot, and the penalty kill had a couple of fails. And thankfully, Calvin Pickard, who is anything but an orthodox NHL goalie, had just enough saves in his pocket. Stopped 34 of 36 or 33 of 35. I'm not sure if they've decided on which is the correct number yet because I'm seeing both. But either way, when you're letting in, you're getting that many shots and you're holding the other guys to two, you're doing something right. Even as his style, he's made a little cold at times.
We had him with
43.
We had him with Flames with 13 grade A shots and the Oilers with 12. And the subset of five alarm shots was 4-2. Wow, wasn't a very thrilling game. You know, I don't know. It was an okay game, but like the announcers made it sound more thrilling than it was. I didn't find it a very good game. Like a lot of the Oilers' best players, like McDavid, hardly got going this game, the entire game. And anyway, Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast with one conundrum. What's your good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to good old Connor Brown, who I thought had a pretty fine game tonight. In fact, I thought his whole line had a pretty fine game again with Derek Ryan and Matthias Janmark. And they dominated on the shot clock. Once again, carrying play and giving up nothing. Just for a second, Janmark, second night in a row that the other guys didn't get a single shot on net while he was on the ice. 5-0 for the Oilers. Two games in a row for Matthias Janmark. In the case of Connor Brown, that count was 7 for the Oilers and 1 against. And this is a night where 5-on-5 shots were 18 for the Oilers and 29 against. So when Brown was on the bench, it was 11-28. And when he was on the ice, it was 7-1. I'd say he probably played pretty well. And my eyes say, I mean, just from those numbers, but my eyes say the same thing. He did score the game's lone 5-on-5 tally with each team scoring 2 power play goals and Edmonton getting the empty netter. And the 5-on-5 that briefly gave him a 2-0 lead was Brown following up a play, which he had been involved in the defensive zone. And then Janmark and Ryan kind of broke away on a quasi 2-on-1, and they kind of slopped the puck around and didn't really get a direct shot. And then Brown came in late, and Janmark chipped it over to him, and Brown hacked it into the corner of the net for the goal. And not the cleanest, but it went up on the board, and he very, very nearly got another one late in the game when he again broke in 2-on-1 with Dreisaitl, and Leon sent a wonderful saucer pass over, and Brown did not miss. He got it up and into the top half of the net.
Yeah, nice
and
play.
Markstrom did very, very well to stay high enough to get his shoulder on that shot and somehow keep it out. Like, he didn't really control it, but it was, you know, he made the stop. And Brown on the night, he had 3 shots off his own stick. And he and Janmark were clean on the penalty kill. Ryan, not so much, but they Brown played 2.25 minutes on the penalty against a very hot Calgary power play. And they did well. And in fact, they had the puck up the ice a fair bit of the time when he and Janmark were penalty killing. So those two guys, and Ryan just a little less because his penalty kill unit with Nugent Hopkins mm-hmm. got beaten for 2 goals.
Yeah.
So, but Brown with Janmark, really both of them deserve a stick tap for being a good thing in what was a pretty sloppy game by Edmonton. They played a good, sharp, professional game.
Yeah, I thought, you know, we talked recently as a conundrum whether Connor Brown should play higher up the lineup. And by the end of the game, I understand that they switched up the lines. I was busy writing the game grades, and I wasn't really tuned into exactly what the lines were because it was kind of a chaotic game. There was power plays, but Brown did get moved up. He now has 4 goals. Janmark has 4 goals. Mm-hmm. Ryan has 5. So none of them have been lighting the lamp regularly this year. But Bruce, you know, I wrote a recent post about the most underrated Oiler, and Janmark was on my list as a possibility because I think he really is underrated. He's mm-hmm. a very effective two-way hockey player. He's their best defensive winger by some amount. And he's good with the puck, strong on the puck. He makes good decisions on the empty net goal. He was in the corner, you know, battling hard and helping pop that puck out to get it going in the right direction. Janmark was mm-hmm. so.
Yep.
He's a good player. I want to give speaking of stick taps on that rush where Drysdale set up Connor Brown. Yeah, Adam Henrique made a really fine back check and mm-hmm. got that play going in the right direction on that play. So, you know, the Oilers, they have enough talent to win a game like this. And this group, this trio is part of it. They're a good group of players.
In the third period, it was Brown moved up to play with Drysdale and Nugent Hopkins.
Okay.
And it was pretty clear that Knobloch wasn't real happy with the performance of any of his lines. And he put Henrique up on the first line with McDavid and Hyman, and moved up Brown to play with Dreisaitl and Nuge. And I think the McLeod-Perry-Kane line stayed together, even though it looked like they were possibly going to take a legal separation on the bench there late in the second period.
That's a good idea to have Corey Perry there with Evander Kane to tune him in now and then, I think. Although they both needed some tuning in.
There was a lot of snarkiness going on there.
Yeah, it's okay.
And they started the third period, and they were technically sitting next to each other on the bench because there was nobody in between them. But there was about 1.5 feet of room in between. It wasn't this shoulder to shoulder, right, you know, side by each. And there was room enough for Glenn Gulitzen to stick his head in there and get in the ears of both of them. And I don't know what the hell that was about. I I'll credit any reporter who has the courage to ask either of those guys what was going on there. But I sure would like to know. It was
gnarly and gnarly.
Bizarre. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Bruce, my good thing, and it might be the first time this year, Vincent Desharnais is my good thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the marks of defenseman getting the job done in a game is if he doesn't make any mistakes on a grade A shot against. If you can get through a game as a defenseman and you've done that, you have done your job fundamentally. And you have done it. You have done well in a hockey game. You know, even the best defensemen tend to average about one mistake per game on a grade A shot. Like Adam Larson did that a few years ago, which was pretty remarkable. You know, most of them were around 1.5 major mistakes on grade A shots per game. Desharnais, none. He kept a clean sheet at even strength this game. So, and on the penalty kill. So he was solid all game long. There was one play, I think it's in the second, Kulak bobbles or steps on the puck, or like he fumbles the puck and there's a two-on-run rush.
Yeah.
And all year long, the Oilers have been rather famous, I think, for getting scored on two-on-one rushes. And it's often the same. The reason is they don't know how to cover off the danger man, the guy without the puck. Because if he can get the pass and shoot, he's more likely to score. And the Oilers just, their defensemen are, I think, relatively inept as a group at stopping that play. They're not very good at it. But Desharnais I just thought was perfect. He just faded towards. The idea is let the shooter go in and shoot. The goalie will make that save, because usually it's from the top of the circles. Because if he goes any closer than that, it gets a little tough, and the defenseman can then make a play on the shooter. But Desharnais, he just faded over to the shooter, took that pass away completely, and I can't remember who shot it. He think he did hit the post, the outside of the post on the shot, but it was the right play and no goal, which was a relief. Then in the final, the Oilers have a 3-2 lead, and they're doing their best to give away the game at the end of the game. And there's two really, really good chances from the slot area, and Desharnais blocked both. He broke up both those plays. He broke up one with a stick and he blocked the other, or maybe he blocked both of them anyway. Just two really super solid plays in front of the net in crunch time late in the game. He was bearing down and he got the job done. That was a great game from Vincent Desharnais. And if he can bring that game to the playoffs, and I'm starting to think he can, like I don't like him out there, you know, in the top four playing with Connor McDavid or Draisaitl or the offensive players. The play does tend to end in the offensive zone, at least in that kind of one-third zone game in the offensive end. He's their weakest defenseman on the Oilers. But in his own zone, he may be the Oilers' best defenseman, just in the bottom third of the ice in the defensive zone. He's fantastic, and he was that way tonight. So credit to him. Oh, I can't hear you, Bruce. Maybe that's...
I muted myself to cough, and then I forgot to unmute. There we go. He was in the box on the 2-2 goal for a penalty. Honestly, there was a puck cleared out to the center line. A Calgary guy was coming at him, and Desharnais was strong on his stick and shot it back in. The Calgary guy dropped his stick on the ice. It wasn't even broken. And the ref decides that, what the hell did he call that anyway? Like slashing. Like he was playing the puck. He put a stick on the puck and he shot it into the zone and they called him for slashing. I mean, these guys tonight, there was junk both ways. Like I'm not saying they changed the outcome of the game, but they certainly changed the flow of the game because there were so many power plays in this game. Was it five each?
Two for six.
Both teams went 2 for 6 on the power play.
There you go.
And in about 14 minutes of odd man hockey. Anyway, it saw it off in the end, both in terms of number of penalties and in terms of number of power play goals. But there were some So that was the softest of the soft to my eye. Like, I looked at the replay. What did he do wrong? He won a battle.
We know what he did wrong, Bruce. Two minutes for being giant. Too big. Yeah, 2 minutes for being too big. He gets that call all the time.
Anyway, so I don't hold that particular one against him. There are other penalties that, you know, you have to point fingers, but that one was just, I thought, a weak call. So.
One of my sons is 6'7", and he used to get that penalty in minor hockey quite a bit. Two minutes for being the biggest guy on the ice. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was at the game tonight in Calgary, actually.
Oh, yeah? So, oh, good.
Yeah, just thinking of...
Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Grade A stuff for a lot of lots of passion going on out there. Like there's a real rivalry, at least.
He got to see the executioner shot live go into the net from Leon Draisaitl. So that's always a thrilling moment for any Oilers fan.
Yes, it is.
Bruce, what's your bad thing?
Yeah, it's got to be execution by Oilers on breakaways. Edmonton has 3 clear-cut breakaways tonight. And out of the 3 clear-cut breakaways tonight, they generated 0 shots on net. They couldn't even get a stinking shot away on any of the 3. Fogel went in on a breakaway, tried to deke, fumbled his deke, shoveled it into the boards. Hyman went in on a breakaway, tried to deke, kind of fumbled his deke, shoveled it into the boards.
And then the worst.
McDavid and Hyman, 2-on-0. You got the guy leading the league in assists. You got a guy with 50 goals. And they go in on a 2-on-0, and it's pass, 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 miss pass, puck in the corner. Nothing. Not even a shot. Come on.
Bruce, if McDavid had shot on that pass from Hyman, the first pass went from McDavid to Hyman.
Mm-hmm.
McDavid to Hyman, and then Hyman put it back to McDavid. If McDavid had shot, he would have scored.
Probably.
Markstrom was way out of position. Like, he could have gone 5-hole or he could have gone top shelf. There was lots of net. But McDavid didn't even look to shoot.
Yeah, he wanted Hyman to get it. He wanted to get the apple, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. Is he going for like the 100 assists or something? Or is he just unselfish? He just wants the other guy to score. Maybe a bit of both.
Well, yeah, that's how you get to 100 assists.
Yeah, he is an unselfish hockey player, Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
But man, if he had shot there, I think he would have scored.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to tell Connor McDavid what to do on the ice when it comes to attacking. So I'll just shut up about it.
I'm not going to tell him what to do. I'm just going to say 3 breakaways, 0 shots on net. Tell you what not to do, and that's whatever it is you're trying to do, because it ain't working.
I thought Fogel came close to scoring there. Like he that was a good try, but
he's not a deker.
Probably not.
His best play, you know, like he's never been good on breakaways, but I've noticed before when he's tried to deke, he usually basically fumbles it.
Yeah.
Whereas with the shot, at least you get it on net, and you know, you got that 15% chance, you know, that it's gonna beat the 10D, maybe 20. You know, he's not going to score a lot of the time, but you got to get the puck on the net if you want to score, guys. 3 clear-cut breakaways.
And my bad thing is also 3 undisciplined penalties by veteran players, Corey Perry in the first, Evander Kane in the second, and Leon Draisaitl in the third. And I'm going to single out Kane and Draisaitl especially. Kane's game, the Oilers are up 2-0. The Flames are about to fold. Like, they've got nothing going on. Mm-hmm. And Kane gets pushed at the end of a rush into the net. And he gets mad and he hacks the guy. He really hacked him. It was going to, you hack someone that hard, and you're Evander Kane especially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just penalty every time. That was just terrible because they just gave the Flames life. They scored on the power play.
Instantly.
It changed the game from a cakewalk for the Oilers, an easy win, into a game they had to battle hard the whole way because he decided he's going to hack somebody. That is not a professional foul. Draisaitl then, late in the third, on the power play, he got hacked pretty good himself. And then he really hacked the Calgary Flame player. So, of course, he
Rasmus got a penalty. Rasmus Anderson, who was the hacker and the hacky on that.
Are you sure? I thought he got the wrong guy, actually.
No, it was Anderson.
Okay. So, but again, like it's just a one goal lead at that point. And you're going to give the other, you're going to take away your power play. Not a great play. And you know what? If this happens in the playoffs, it's a disaster. You just can't have it. You got to take it. And we'll see if they can turn that off. Like, I think they can actually, in terms of the intensity, the hitting, the defensive discipline, I think they can turn that off and on. I don't know about this, though, Bruce, this kind of short fuse that some of these players have.
All three cases.
I'm Perry a little bit worried.
Guy right after the whistle at the blue line as well. Yeah. The play was a dead play in the case of both Perry and Kane's penalties.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what they were arguing about, which one was the worst penalty. They did not have a particularly good game, either of those guys.
It was you. No, it was you. Two hotheads going at it.
Out of sorts.
Yeah, they didn't. Well, after their great game against the Avs, three goals for that line. And then, it was not good tonight at all. That line was weak. You know, you pointed out the checking line of Ryan, Janmark, and Brown. They didn't have one, according to our tally, they didn't have one grade A shot against them. Like, they didn't. They were they were fantastic out there. Bruce, your numero.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 40 and 100. Leon Draisaitl scored his 40th goal of the season last night after getting his 100th point. No, tonight, sorry. After getting his 100th point of the season last night, he followed up with his 40th goal of the season on the executioner's shot. And he has now taken over the lead among active players in terms of he's the only guy in the league today who has 5 40-goal seasons and 5 100-point seasons.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Gregor was talking about that on his show yesterday, Jason Gregor. And so I looked it up, and sure enough, there's, you know, Draisaitl just underneath because he hadn't got to either milestone at that point. But he's done the 45. Well, this is all five of the last 6 years. He fell short the one season that was only 56 games long. He only scored 31 goals and 84 points. So he was on pace for another, 45. 120 kind of season that year. So he's just been just such a consistent producer for the Oilers, and he now stands out in this sort of it's an ersatz category in a sense, but in another sense those are real significant milestones. 40 goal seasons and 100 point seasons are major marks for snipers and point scorers generally, and he's got the best combination of those two skills, I would argue, of anyone in the league in terms of being able to do both things.
My number also relates to Leon Draisaitl's consistency, and for the last five seasons we've been in our grade A shots project, we've been differentiating what kind of shots go in the net, whether it's a jam shot or a tip shot or a one-timer shot. So we have numbers for Leon Draisaitl's executioner shots. Bruce, so in the last 5 years in the regular season, I'll give you the goal, how many goals he scored with the executioner shot each year. Starting in 2019-20, he had 21 one-timers going that year. The next year, in 56 games, he had 18. The next year, 21. The next year, 17. This year, 21. So three of the last 5 years, he's at 21. Who knows how many would have had in 2021 when he had just 18. His shooting percentage on the executioner shot, his overall shooting percentage in those years has been each by season 32%, 39%, 37%, 33%, and 31% this year. He's down a little bit this year. Overall, he's averaged 35%, and that includes the playoffs. Bruce, this is the not only the most lethal weapon in hockey, it's also one of the steadiest. He's like Doc Holliday out there with his gun. Like he is steady and deadly. And what a weapon. What a weapon. And I've said this many times before, I'll say it again. Decades from now, you know, if you're a young fan right now, decades from now, you won't remember, unless you're Bruce McCurdy, have a memory like Bruce McCurdy, you won't remember a whole heck of a lot about the McDavid era, but you will remember Connor McDavid rushing the puck. That will be burned into your head. Mm-hmm. Just this image of him and how he looked, how he moved. But you will also remember Leon Draisaitl's executioner shot and either McDavid or Nugent Hopkins setting him up and him firing it in. That's what I remember from the Gretzky era. Like I remember certain moments, lots mm-hmm. of moments, but what I really remember is Wayne Gretzky serpentining around the ice with the puck. And I remember Gretzky setting up Yari Curry.
Finding
Curry for that one. I mean, I also remember other things like Messier's wrist shot and Messier setting up Anderson with their sneaky play and Anderson crashing the net and Coffey moving with the ice. But it's those two things that stand out most for me is Curry's one-timer and Gretzky with the puck. And it's the same in this era. Now, if we can only get some Stanley Cups in this era as well, all will be well in this era.
Yeah, well, this guy's been a consistent producer for 8 years, really, but for the last 6 years, since getting his 50th in Calgary on the last game of the season, 5 years ago, the day that Mark Giordano took down Connor McDavid and ruined his summer, Leon got his 50th. So the last six seasons, on the power play, 16, 16, 15 goals, then 24, 32, and now he's back to 20. After a little bit of a slow start this year, 20 used to be the Oilers franchise record shared by Wayne Gretzky and Ryan Smith.
Wow.
And Draisaitl has obliterated that over the last 2 years, and here he is again. And here's the other talk about consistently. This is his shooting percentage generally, not the executioner's shot. And he's got, I'll just round it, 22, 20, 19, 20, 21, 19 for the last 6 years.
But I thought a high shooting percentage was unsustainable, Bruce.
Yeah, well,
we were told that
usually,
so emphatically.
It usually is. I mean, Jordan Eberle had a percentage like that 1 year and got a big contract, and then he immediately fell back to, you know, pretty good, but not, I mean, anything close to 20% is fantastic for shooting percentage in this league. I mean, the goalies stop 90-plus percent of the shots unless they're facing Leon. They only stop 80%, you know.
It usually is unsustainable. It usually is, except for guys who score around the net garbage goals. Like I bet you Corey Perry had a high shooting percentage for a long time. I could be, maybe I'm wrong about that, but Draisaitl,
Yari Curry did.
Yari Curry did. And I remember in those old debates about whether it was sustainable or not, you would often raise the Oilers and Yari Curry. And Draisaitl, again, he's that rare player like Curry who is choosy on his shots, and when he does shoot it, he is deadly.
Yeah, well, this year he's down to 18.8%, so that's why he's only got 40 goals.
There you go.
So he's, whereas Curry had 7 years in a row over 20%, and then four of them in the middle were over 25% in a row. That's how deadly the Gretzky to Curry axis was.
So, Bruce, tonight's conundrum. The Oilers are now just 3 points back of the Vancouver Canucks, 102-99. The Oilers have a game in hand on Vancouver. Plus, they play Vancouver next Saturday night.
Yep.
Before then, they play Wednesday night against whom?
Vegas.
Vegas Wednesday. And Friday night against Arizona.
Yep.
So, the conundrum is, do they keep the pedal to the metal? Do they keep the pedal to the metal and go all out to try to get the divisional championship, which is within their, like, honestly, it's within their grasp at this point that could happen. The Oilers have a goal differential of plus 56. Only two teams now are higher than the Oilers, Dallas and Florida. Vancouver's is plus 53, their goal differential. So it's It's an interesting question. You know, I guess some people would just say, well, you always go for it. You always just give it your all. But I don't think the real world works that way. And I think teams, and especially veteran teams, can back off and go into cruise control. And we've actually seen that with the Oilers a little bit since their winning streak. They've now and then been in cruise control. I think they were kind of in cruise control tonight. And they're able to win games like this because they're just superior to so many teams. What do you think they should do, Bruce? Cruise control or pedal to the metal?
Yeah, well, I mean, last night I was on this very podcast arguing cruise control and get players rest. I still think that's doable and I still think it's a priority. But at the same time, you look at these standings and the Oilers have 6 left. Vancouver have 5 left. And they have 1 left against each other. If Edmonton were to win out their last 6 games and specifically beat Vancouver in regulation, it wouldn't matter if they won the other games in extra time, gimmick time or not. But they would have to beat Vancouver in regulation. And if they did that, Vancouver can't get to what Edmonton would get to, which is, 100? And the Oilers are right now at 99 points. So they could get to 111. Vancouver can get to 112, but if they lose to Edmonton in regulation, they can only get to 110. So their destiny is in their own hands. Now, it stands to reason they're not going to win 6 in a row, but also stands to reason that Vancouver's not going to win all their games either. They got games against Vegas, Arizona, at Edmonton versus Calgary, and then at Winnipeg to close out. So those aren't necessarily gift games. Arizona's playing tough. I mean, Oilers play Arizona twice, so there's nothing guaranteed. But it's now officially up for grabs, and it sure would be nice to grab a division flag for the first time in 37 years. So it is a bit of a bobble, but being rested and raring to go for the playoffs is a huge priority. So it is a conundrum.
So the team that finishes 8th is the team that finishes first in the West will face in the team that plays 8th, correct? So that's Dallas. They got 105 points. They're going to be number one. So almost certainly it's going to be, I think that's a fairly safe bet. Vancouver has 102, Dallas has 105. You know, it's possible. But so we still don't know whether that number 8 team is going to be Vegas or Nashville. I would just love to see Vegas move over to the other side and have Vegas, Winnipeg, Colorado, and Dallas beating up on each other over on that side. And then whoever emerges has to play the winner of the Pacific. That's what I'm hoping happens. Watch what you wish for. So that would leave Vancouver, Edmonton, Los Angeles, and Nashville on this side. Edmonton against Nashville. If Edmonton was to finish first ahead of Vancouver, Edmonton could play Nashville.
Good.
That'd be an interesting series. I mean, Edmonton seems to have matched up pretty well against Nashville in recent years. But Nashville's just been playing lights out hockey.
Yep.
So you just never know. You never know what's going to happen. Strange things happen in the playoffs.
Well, as it stands right now, the Kings are 1 point ahead of Vegas for 3rd in the West, and Vegas has a game in hand. So that could go either way.
Yeah.
And it could go either way right down to the end, and that the Oilers could clinch first place on the last game of the season, only to find that results in other games have them playing
Vegas.
Vegas or it could be Nashville, but Nashville and Vegas are tied with each other, right? Either one of them could finish 7th or 8th, or LA could be in there. So all you can do is finish where you finish. I mean, the one bobble for finishing first in your division is you have home ice advantage for first 2 rounds.
Yes.
Of the playoffs.
So, What I think should happen, Bruce, is they have these two games before they play Vancouver. The game against Vancouver, I think, essentially decides it. Although you never know, but you know, it's a huge game next Saturday. If the Oilers win, then there's maybe a bit more impetus to, you know, if they're in a position then where they're actually a couple points ahead of Vancouver by then, or a point ahead of Vancouver. And it gets tough, but really, I think fundamentally the key is to be rested and healthy going into the playoffs. Like when Hyman got that Bouchard shot off his foot tonight, that was the worst. That was the scariest moment of the game by far. That was, you know, that's like, oh, seriously. Uh-huh. And it still is scary. Who knows how his foot is. So if you can sit him out, like if, you know, for instance, like let's say his foot's, that has got to hurt like hell. And it's still, I'm sure it still hurts like hell. And if he could sit out a game or two, you know, that kind of thing, have McDavid sit out a game, have Drysdale sit out a game. I'm totally on with that. And I know that a lot of Oilers fans will hate to hear that, but that's how I see it. And I think that's more important than winning the division. I think you can, if it's there, yeah, battle for it. But the most important thing is to be rested heading into the playoffs. And this crazy schedule with 5 games in 7 days, is that what it is? Yep. 5 games in 7 days. Like that's in the last week of the season. Give those guys a rest in one of those games. You can't play that many games. You just, all the good players should be sitting out at least one of those games. So they just play 4 and 7. That's how I see it.
Yeah, that's my take as well. And of course, just because you have a guy sitting out doesn't mean you can't try and win that game.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, you have 3 games, 2 against Arizona and 1 against San Jose, where you might not need your 100%, you know, top 20 players to beat them, but you know, you still have to look after details. But any game, if they're sitting one of their stars, you know, that will, you know, take them down a notch. But in a way, I think you mentioned last night, it's almost like the preseason. You have, you know, 5 games on the calendar. Well, nobody's going to play all 5. You're going to have guys playing 2 and 3 and 4 of those games. And they do have the roster flexibility now that they can, there's a few different ways they can approach it. So I'm still going to write about it tomorrow, but this tantalizing, you know, with Vancouver losing at LA tonight, and by the way, with Dallas losing at Chicago tonight in regulation, right? That even the conference crown, you know, if they come down to earth a little bit,
They got 105 points. Oilers at what, 99?
99 with a game in hand and the tiebreaker on Edmonton's side.
So, whew. Let's see.
Bruce. Couple Dallas losses and it's...
yeah. You know. Well, let's leave it there, Bruce. Thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.